Hello, hello. Good morning for those of you in the US. I am super excited to chat with Nick, but I say that every day. I'm pretty sure that's my intro every single time, but I'm just so blessed with these amazing guests. So Nick, I would love if you could introduce yourself.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me on, Tessa. Of course. Yeah. So my name's Nick Taylor. I'm from Montreal, Canada. So East Coast representing. And currently I'm a developer advocate at a company called Pomerium. The TLDR there is, if you've never heard of that, is basically, I'm going to read it just so I make sure I get it right. But we're like zero trust, identity aware proxy platform that enables secure clientless connections to web apps without the need of a corporate VPN. And we can dive into that a bit if you want to. But all I'd say is I've kind of been in the industry for quite a while. It's been professionally since 2002, been working. And it's kind of been all over the map, really, like different domains, full stack, front end, now officially developer advocate, because people always think I'm a developer advocate. So I was like, you know what, let's do this.
Yeah. Well, you're good at putting yourself out there, which I think is like one of the key traits of a developer advocate, is the ability to go hang with devs and like help them and support them, you know, which you're great at.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I'm extroverted, so it definitely easier for me to talk to people. Like, I'm that person that can go randomly up to somebody at a conference and say, hey, what's up? Can I sit here? Or like, you know, and I know not everybody's like that, but if you aren't, I think you can still leverage that even if you're introverted or ambivert, just might look a little different, but yeah.
Yep. I totally agree with that. It's actually interesting because like every time I do Myers-Briggs, it says I'm like crazy extroverted. But then when I'm at like a conference, even if I'm hanging with developers, but if I'm specially hanging with non-developers, I am like wiped once I'm done hanging out with people. But yeah, if it's developers and I'm like in it, sorry, I got like distracted by this. Like Restream's really jacked up that you and I are streaming at the same time. They're like, look, the streams are like, connected. Yeah. Anyways, so long story short, gotta love the derailment moments. So I was like kind of chuckling a little bit, because as you were like, you know, describing your new role and new company, obviously it's like pretty new for you. So, you know, that like learning curve when you're a developer advocate that's supposed to advocate for a product that you don't know yet, you're like, okay, let me just figure out that elevator speech. And you like slowly improve it over time. And it's interesting because I was that, and I'm gonna get into the question here, as I was always that part always felt like the hardest. I felt like the biggest imposter, like going into a new company as a developer advocate, not as a software engineer, because I was like, oh, we're different. It's different. We're all writing code. But I don't know why. Yeah. As a dev advocate, I was like, I got to come in. I got to know stuff. I got to understand it. And that like learning curve in the beginning is so hard. And now I'm doing it with multiple clients. And I'm like, what have I done to myself? All these learning curves. But how are you essentially like, I know that it's sort of new for you, but to dive into that, like, how's the learning curve? Like, how are you finding sort of diving into developer advocacy versus software engineering in this case?
Yeah, well, like I alluded to before, so like I've been working professionally in open source, i.e. like literally getting paid to work in open source. I started at Dev2 and then Netlify, and then I was at OpenSauce, and now I'm here at Pomerium. And Pomerium's open core, so like the literal core of the product is open source. You can use it even if you don't have like enterprise or like another offering we have. Obviously, you know, we do want to make money at some point, so hopefully enterprise people, you know, go to it. But
for sure,
it's I think to your point, you're asking about like just learning the product.
Yeah, like the learning curve of a dev advocate, just it feels so steep. I don't know why. Do you feel like it feels so steep?
I think I don't want to say I'm different, but because I've been full-time engineering, like what I was mentioning before, like I was literally full-time engineering all my roles up until now. And I just kind of did dev advocacy as a part of it without realizing, I guess. But I think having a strong engineering background has made the learning curve a lot easier. But that said, there's still like stuff I'm not aware of, like, and it's kind of funny because like they didn't really have a developer. I'm the only developer advocate there right now. And they didn't really have an interview process for it. I mean, I did meet my manager who's head of marketing and stuff, and we definitely talked about stuff. But what I mean is they're like, we're not really sure what to interview. Like, I showed pieces I'd done in videos and stuff, but I basically did the back end interview. So I had to basically code, and people might say like, oh man, that's not fair. But honestly, I think it was a good thing because it's a very technical product. And so I think it was to my benefit that I had to do that. And
yeah,
and it, like, you know, it's not like we're building a rocket ship to go to Saturn or something, but it's, you know, but it is still a potentially complex product. Like, it's a, I think it's easy to use, but like anything that is easy to use, it's kind of complex to make something simple. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So anyways, all that to say is I think having done that test, I actually got a taste for like what the product actually does. And I've actually used it locally because, like I said, it's open core. So like a hobbyist can use it. So like I basically set it up on my own machine just to see how everything works. But that said, like, I'm drinking from the fire hose right now. It's like I'm literally on day 8 today. Like,
dang,
like 7.5 right now. And, you know, I don't know about you, but like, there's always nice onboarding processes and stuff at most of the places I've worked at in recent years. But my introduction to a new role has always been baptism by fire. And I don't know if people still say that or if it's okay to say that. But if somebody in the chat, if it's not cool to say that anymore, let me know. But like, basically, it's just like no time, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I still did my onboarding and stuff, but it's just like, I've already got PRs up to fix some of the documentation. I'm posting some work to other open source repos to show how to configure our product with theirs. And I'm also like, I think the main thing that's new for me is I've never been under marketing. So it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's just new for me. That's all. That's all I mean. And my team's awesome. It's Roxy says canceling me. Thanks, Roxy. Well, please let me know what is it? Baptism by I don't know what LED light. I don't know. What do we say? I don't know. Anyways,
I can't. Get it here. Oh man.
That's a weird tangent for a second, but I got a haircut like 2 days ago, and because I my hair grows really fast, and I look like the Lion King pretty quickly, and I was like number one on the sides, which is what I normally do, but the top, it was literally like about this tall before, and I'm like take off half, and I think she took off 7/8, so like, I don't know, basically I got a brush cut. It'll probably be back to Lion King in a week, so we'll be
good. My gosh, my husband would be so jealous. Like, he started balding when he was like 21, I think, so he's like completely bald now, but he really wants the Brad Pitt hair in whatever that Fury movie is, where it like has like to be like down the middle, so it sounds exactly like the hair he wants.
cool. Yeah, anyway, sorry for derailing that. I blame Jason in the chat asking about hair, but
so you were just talking about reporting to marketing, like, you know, it's happened to that. Obviously you're day 8, right? So that's like a new thing. I would say like marketing is my least favorite team to report to. I'm saying that, like, and I mean that in a like not a bad way, but in just a like, they have different objectives, you know, than like what you think about as like an engineer and sort of what developers think about. And so sometimes it's really hard to like connect all those dots together of like, okay, you care about this, but I care about documentation. So I think that's like, you know, sort of the barrier, at least that I feel like most experience in that like marketing reporting structure. Other than that, like, it's actually really cool because you're like end up being a superhero, because like most of them are not usually super technical. And so they're like, oh, whatever. Yeah. Like, they don't understand something and you're like, oh, it's just this. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're a god, which is, I mean, who doesn't love that?
Yeah. No pressure, Nick. No pressure. the team's awesome. And it's just more like you said, objectives are different than engineering, obviously. But I think coming with a strong engineering background, to your point, is like, it's actually helpful. And it's also, I think, good for me because like I'll understand more about the business over time too, because you know, so, I got an awesome crew. So like, and I think the other thing is like, I've you know, I've given conference talks and gone to conferences, I'll just end up going to more now. Ooh. Which I'm totally game for.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's different, and it's not a bad thing, but like, people typically know me from the web dev community. So mm-hmm. like front end or full stack. And so like, for example, yeah. I'm going to KubeCon in London and then the North America one this year. And that's more like infra, mm-hmm. Kubernetes, obviously. And we're like a security company. Yeah. So it's, you know, there's definitely overlaps in those communities, but it's like, to some degree, it's a new community. Uh-huh. And which I'm totally game to just yep. say hey to whoever. But it's just something different, you know what I mean? And it's definitely not a bad thing. It's just I get to make new friends, basically. So,
yeah. You know, like, that's absolutely probably my favorite thing about DevRel. Because I've been able to go from, like, I think, like, so WordPress, DevOps, news. Twitter calls themselves okay. news, but social media. Yeah. You know, like, news.
Yeah, yeah.
FinTech. And then over to more, like, one, security. That one was hard. Getting into security is hard. So if you need to like have battle wound war cries, like, you just hit me up. We can talk about that. Security was hard.
Okay.
Yeah. And then over to like AR, augmented reality, which is like a whole new community. And I will tell yeah. you, honestly, I think that's my favorite thing of DevRel, is actually getting to go into, now that you say this, like getting to go into these new communities and make new friends. Cause you have to take those skills, and like, you might be yeah. introverted or extroverted, but you literally have to be like, hey, hey, person sitting on a bench at a conference, I don't know anybody, so I'm just going to start making friends everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is, it's definitely different, but it's also like, I don't know. I think it's exciting. I don't know if it's exciting to you, but it's like new friends. Yay.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And I mean, that said, I do know some people in the space, you yeah. know, not super well, but like, but yeah, no, I'm just excited to meet new people. And like, one of the things about the, you know, the developer advocacy role is like, at least right now, like, I'm trying to create awareness of the product too. So like, it's,
yeah.
it's just a fun time. I'm going to be having people on as guests to just talk Yay. About, you know, like, I don't know. It's, I'm curious about your thoughts. Like, we were talking briefly before the live stream, but like, I am not a salesperson. Like, I never will be. You know, if I worked for a company with a bad product and they said you're doing sales, I'd be like, you probably shouldn't buy this. You know, like that's you know, like
that's reality.
That said, our product is good. That's not what I mean. But
yeah.
But yeah, I lost my train of thought there. But
what about ask me something about, and then talk about sales.
Get my yeah, yeah, I forget. I lost it. But
new developers.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's yeah, it's just oh yeah, like there's a balance, I think, that is potentially difficult for developer advocacy, where you're trying to create awareness of your product, but you can't come across as a shill either. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yep.
Like, hey, welcome to the live stream, buy our product. You know, like, obviously, I mean, I'm being a very explicit, terrible example there, but like, yep. you know, and like, so you just have to, you know, and I will tweak this as I go along, I think, but like,
yeah.
I think it's just finding that balance where like, you want to build community, you want to build awareness of the product, but you don't want to be like some kind of come off as like sleazy salesperson. And nothing against sales. That's not what I mean. We have some great salespeople too. That's I'm okay. saying all the wrong things.
It's okay. I you're not though. See, that's the thing is like, I think what you're sharing is like how developers see it, right? Like this is how developers think, but we don't necessarily think that salespeople are sleazy, but like in our dev mind, we're like, you stop us from building, like go back.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. And we've talked about this before, but like, just in terms of like a product.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but there's very few products I buy, but when I buy them, it's like, cause I use it all the time. And like, this yep. is like, just, I think, cause there's been an explosion of dev tooling and yeah. like, and there's a lot of cool stuff out there. But at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, cool. But you know, yes, I could afford it, but like, I don't really need that, you know, like, yeah. and like, so like, I've kind of found my like, you know, I have a good core set of tools that I pay for. And it's all that to say is like, I think it's difficult to find product market fit aside from like, hey, that's cool. And like, and it's also, you know, like a lot of dev tools, it starts with a lot of bottom up, which doesn't really make any revenue. And there's a free tier and that's good to create awareness. But like sometimes, like you've seen like several companies have got rid of their free tier because it's actually a burden to manage as well, potentially. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have free tiers. I think they're a good idea to get people. Like when I worked at Netlify, like we had a free tier. We still have a free tier there. You know, Vercel has a free tier too. And the reason is like devs end up liking those products.
Yep.
And then long term, these people that were using the free tier, maybe they upgrade, but a lot of times these people end up working at companies and they're like, Netlify is awesome or Vercel is awesome, you know, and I think we should use that product, you know? And like, so that's where the bottom up helps.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. I don't really have an answer to what I was saying. It was just more like observations, I guess, but.
Yeah. Well, I think like, you know, to kind of speak to like what you were saying there, right, is that you're going to kind of navigate that beginning of like, how do you start to build those relationships without feeling salesy? Honestly, the best technique that I have had was office hours. So like pitch it like it's office hours. And so this is like what I have done in the past anyways, doesn't mean it's the way to do it, but brought together like the team, right? So can someone from product come? Can someone from Eng come? Depending on if Eng wants to be involved with customers and, or not, right? That's a whole thing. But you know, maybe someone from product marketing has come. Just depend on like the dynamic and what the team objectives are, like who wants to start to meet devs, but very much like dev friendly. They love seeing DevRel in there. They love seeing product in there because then they could talk about the product. What do we expect? They could ask for things and then DevRel could kind of dive in. And then we have partner engineer who was like technical in this case because our DevRel was more community. But long story short, just a candid conversation, right? An hour long, whatever. Even if you want to do 2 hours long where it's like come and go and it's an open time. They're like incredibly lucrative because then devs just sort of join. They don't have to say anything. They can kind of just watch and hang out. But then when it's like, oh, wait, I feel comfortable or they're talking about something I care about, then they can jump in. And then like over time, that actually was the technique that I've leveraged many times to get devs into the community forums to start empowering other developers, right? Start to help the other developers. And you start to like create what you were just talking about with like favorite products, like your advocates, you know, like if we love something, we will go and talk about it. So if you can create those customers, right? Like that's, So anyways, that's what I love office hours for. It feels very authentic to join, but it's very like lucrative on the tail end too.
Yeah, for sure. And like, in terms of building that community, because I've literally done this before, I worked at Dev2 and like, we like, I think a lot of times naively people will, hey, Fatuma, good to see you. Sorry, Fatuma just joined the chat.
Definitely say hi.
You know, I think people think community is potentially just microwavable, like, okay, create Discord, press start. Okay, 300,000 people. Like, and I know Jason's in the chat from Torque and like he's doing a great job building out community, but it takes time. Like when I started working at Dev2 in January 2020, and I think I can't remember the number of members we had at the time, but it was probably like maybe 100,000.
Yeah.
By the time I left, we were like over 1 million in like 20. Was that 20? It was like mid 2022. And
I remember that.
And the reason why, I mean, I still think it's a good platform, but the reason why was we were so engaged with the community. Like, even though I was full-time engineering, I was always like commenting on people's posts and like, and it's, and you know, and just like you said, creating awareness of like at one point, like people just associated me with Dev2 because like I was always out there.
That's how we met, I'm pretty sure, or got first.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but like all that to say is like, I think having a community around your product is important, but it's not going to happen overnight. And I think sometimes people think of that unrealistically, you know? So throwing that out there for anybody who's starting a community, because like I've literally gone through it. And it takes a lot of time because like at one time, like Dev2 eventually became like, Dev2 still exists, but like the main product became this generic platform that you could use. And so like we were dog fooding it. And basically I created my own community. I had vscodetips.com, which I still own the domain if anybody wants to buy that. But But like I created the community just to make sure like the product was working well and I was putting time into it. But then I closed down the community eventually because it was literally just me managing it. And yeah. I just did not have the time to do it. And it was
a lot of work.
Unfair to me and unfair to the community. So like, you know, and that's just another thing where you need people to kind of step up in the community. You don't literally have to say like you need to become a moderator, but like yep. I see like Jeff Jesse's in the chat, who's awesome. He's been a moderator at Dev2 for years now, you know, like,
yep.
And like, I remember even Stack Overflow in the early days, like I became a moderator. And like, it's weird because like people built this product, they're making money off of it, but you're still happy to contribute to yeah. it in some way, you know, yep. which if you think about it, like, why am I doing this for free? Like if you go like forget emotions or anything, but it's just like people just get invested in these things, yep. you know, and it's like, exactly. and anyways, community.
No, I loved it. I think you were on a beautiful rant. I agree with that. Like the way that I actually got started into like actually building websites was building a huge Guitar Hero community of like tournaments and
ended awesome. Up
getting like recognized in their forums. And I was a moderator and got cool swag. And like, yeah, it's, I think it's just like our way of like getting involved, right? And I know that developers specifically, like we really enjoy hanging out with their peers, whether we're extroverted or introverted. Like this is true of, yeah. of all developers. Like they all want to spend time with their peers. Yes, they could get tired and need to like rest and recuperate, right? But they still want to do it. And I think it's yeah. the same with like any passion we deeply have, right? Like I was just seriously nerding out on Guitar Hero and video games at that stage in my life, right? And so it's just a beautiful thing for that part of my life. Yes. Totally. See, Roxy gets it. Every time I see Guitar Hero, I'm just like, it's like my heart skips a beat again. It's just this. But I haven't played it in years, except for at bar arcades. Anyways.
Yeah.
But I do agree. There is definitely a lot of, there's a lot of time and effort. Like if you ask Jason, you know, someone in the chat that you'd mentioned, how yeah. much energy he puts in the community building, I can only imagine. Like I know that he's on his phone, he texts people, he's talking to people, he's building relationships.
Yeah.
And like it is a ton of work, like a ton of yeah. work for sure.
Yeah, no, 100%. And yeah. And also just want to say hi to Richard in the chat.
Yes.
I'm trying to say hi to everybody, but I don't want to just end up saying hi the whole live stream.
Nah, it's all good. You're really good on your stream with like bringing people's comments and stuff up where I'm like deep ingrained in the conversation. So I'm like, oh, hey, there is a chat. Yep. Cool.
But yeah, I always, yeah. It takes time to navigate that because like I'll be live coding, I'll be checking the chat. And if I have a guest, so it's like, I don't know. Not that I think people think live streaming is easy, but like it there's a lot more going on than you realize. So
yep. Plus yeah. the beverages. We had to talk about this ahead of time. Like I had to run around quickly yeah. and get all my beverages.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Gotta be ready. Okay, so you spoke to a little bit of some of the stuff that you're doing in your day job already, 8 days yeah. in, like pretty impressive. Let's like double tap back into that. You had mentioned some docs. I think you're doing some partnerships, some connections with some other open source repositories. Super cool. Yeah. That's like meaningful work. Do you want to kind of speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah. I don't have the PR up yet, but like, it's a little technical, not a big deal, but like basically our product can act as a reverse proxy. So like, PostHog, which is a pretty popular analytics platform yeah. For capturing events, whatever. If anybody has an ad blocker like uBlock or similar, or your browser just blocks like, you know, ads and stuff,
yep.
It recognizes like known like analytics platforms. So what you can do is like say like my site, nikkyt.co, if I added PostHog to it, I could add a subdomain like called like e.nikkyt.co, and that could be a proxy to PostHog. And then because it's under my domain, the you know, the blockers won't block it because it's like, oh, it's traffic from your own site, you know what I mean? So like there's many ways you can do this. Yep. Like there's other offerings that do this, like the docs on posthog.com, which is a open source repo, by the way. You know, there's like setup for Vercel, Netlify, Remix, CloudFront, a few. And anyways, like Pomerium is a good use case for that too. So basically I just opened up an issue, said, hey, like I'd like to add Pomerium to one of the options. And you know, the one of the maintainers from Posthog is like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, go for it. Just tag me when the PR is up. So it's a nice thing because one, it's creating awareness about the product, but it actually solves an actual problem too. It's not just like put my thing in there kind of thing, yeah. You know? And aside from that, yeah, I've been going through our docs just to like, I don't know about you, but like, even though our product is super technical, I want to be able to go through the docs and I can literally copy paste things and just run it. And so I found some things where it's just like, just be more explicit. Like this is how you can set this setting. Just some improvements. And like, this is going to be an ongoing thing, but like, because I have to showcase the product at some point. And if I point to the docs and I can't just say, copy this and then you're good to go kind of. So I've been doing that too. And one thing I've been doing too is like just asking lots of questions, and we have like a dev channel in our Slack, and I've definitely had some one-on-ones with people on the team already. Like my whole team, I met with Bobby, our CEO, for a one-on-one, and you're setting up some recurring one-on-ones just to, you know, like, hey, how's it, you know, just to catch up, but also just like, hey, how do you think this is working? Or like, tomorrow I got a one-on-one with Svetlana, one of our QA. So just want to hear about the work she's doing. And also she's working on a Terraform provider. She's testing it. And so like, I don't know anything about that yet. So I just want to kind of ask her questions about that. So
yeah,
I think, I don't know. I guess one of the things that attracted me to the product is I've really been enjoying working in open source, and even though there is an enterprise aspect and a paid tier for this, it's still open source at its core, like literally open core. And I don't know, ideally if I can work in open source and get paid the rest of my life, that would be ideal for me. But like
you and I are the same there.
So it's just fun. And like I alluded to this before talking about community, but like literally one of my favorite things is like hanging on a stream like this, or like having a guest on, doing some live coding, talking about somebody's project, you know, and like, and these things have nice side effects eventually, you know, but, it all comes back to, you know, just building the community, you know, and it's like, and again, I can't reiterate this enough, but it just takes time to build a community. It really does.
Yep. It does. And I mean, when you think about it too, it's like building a relationship. Like I like to compare community to like dating, but I also, my favorite analogy is actually a garden. So I should probably use that instead. Like
instead of swipe left, swipe right.
Yeah. Well, the dating thing is like, you don't just roll in and you're like, oh, do you want to make out? You know, it's like that is just not a thing you do. You like cord situations. You're like, yes, right. Like you build it up.
Well, you could, but results may vary.
Right. Results may vary. Same to community, right? You roll in and start talking to a dev and you're like, hey, you want to come hang out? They're going to be like, who are you? But the garden analogy actually is really fitting because it's like, I always say that it's like, put the seeds in, right? You're planting the seeds. So like right now you're planting seeds, you know, and like you've got a few months before you're like, oh, my seeds are starting to sprout. Jason, here we go. Your seeds are starting to sprout, you know, and then you can start to grow. I probably shouldn't have made that silly comment, but how you doing?
Don't worry. Honestly, this isn't live. We can edit it later, right?
Yeah. There we go. There we go. I will say, if I wasn't married, how you doing probably would work on me, honestly, even if someone was rolling in to try to get me to join their community, because I'm obsessed with friends. So, hey, sometimes it is knowing their personality. But all joking aside, right, it's like it is not easy. And I think that that actually has been really one of the things for me in my business. It's been kind of hard because I really want to have that as a service deliverable, right, that I am like effectively building community. But there it's not impossible to prove. Yeah. Prove that there is something happening, but how do you get someone to keep investing to be like, it's not the results you want yet, but they're getting there. Like I'm close, yeah. Right? That's not like, no one wants to see that. And so it's been more fundamentals of what is strategically need to happen. And here's how your team can go build community, which is fine. But man, do I miss actually being the one to build it. So that's what the Built for Dev Hub is for.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe try in the community. Hey, want to make out if it's not in the code. I don't know. In all seriousness, no, though, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. That is not the way to introduce. But I think it's interesting too, because I really think that like sort of developer relations generally, right? If we kind of like take a step back, it's like, it is just this idea of like hanging out with their peers in the same exact way that you and I are doing this. Like if you and I were coding with your company's product, boom, you're like working, right? But you're doing something that you like love doing. And I think that's like why I love it so much, is like, I'm just like, yes, I get to like hang out with my people and get paid to like hang out with them.
Yeah, totally. And I think, I don't think it's a spicy take, but I think like it's super important to be super technical as well. Like there was like a period during the ZERP era, like the 2020s to 2023, maybe, like there's a lot of layoffs in DevRel and stuff, but there's also like, I don't know, like I'm kind of generalizing here, because like, for example, Rizelle Scarlett, who we both know, she's awesome. And she started off as a junior developer advocate, but she just crushed it. But like, there was other people that just came in, like no engineering experience, and just like, you kind of don't have any credibility. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, I I'm a developer advocate. Oh, what have you built? This is my first job. Like, and I'm not saying that to discourage people from getting into the field. That's not what I mean. It's just like, I think it's more valuable if you actually have engineering experience first before doing that. And Brian Douglas, my old CEO from OpenSauce, who is he headed developer relations over at GitHub, and he's doing that over at the Linux Foundation now. And he's basically saying like, kind of the way I was operating, like before I was an actual DevRel, is like how old school DevRel used to work. Yes. You were like an engineer, and then you'd give a talk, and then you would talk about the product. And I think it kind of skewed, this is just my observations, but like, so don't, you know, take it as you will. But like, I think there was a huge shift where it all just became content at one point. And not to say that there weren't super technical people in the field still, like they're, you know, like I'm sure you remember like Microsoft like assembled like the Avengers basically of DevRel in like, I think it was like 2016 or something. You had like just like a huge amount of talent, like Emily Freeman, and I can't remember all the people, but like Ashley Willis, and like I don't know these people personally, but like they were like basically like the elite of that field, and like they just assembled them, and then like I don't know what happened there, but like but then like I feel like, again, just observation, but I felt like things from a DevRel perspective just became more about talks and content. And I think it's important to come back to having like a, like obviously just the technical aspect of it too, like you know, and like literally like I personally think like I will have failed at my role if I don't understand the product inside and out after I don't know how many months, but like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So no, anyways, maybe spicy, maybe not. I don't know.
I think it's a spicy take for people. It's going to be a spicy take for someone who may have fallen into this category, right? And ended up doing this role unknowingly, realizing likely that DevRel was sort of going in a direction that I don't think any of us wanted to go. So like, I'll tell you that right now, like I definitely saw that happening too. And like, I started the show for the whole purpose that like my own technical skills have like literally disappeared. I went to get into terminal the other day and I was like, holy mother of, I couldn't do anything. I was like, whoa. Then I was like, I don't even have an SSH key on my computer. I'm like, what has happened to me? I think that it happens so quickly, right? And like, I ended up in leadership, and I think probably the last at least 5 to 6, you know, years I was in, but I would say it's very much a business leadership type of roles. I think, you know, essentially Twitter was probably the last time, and that was in 2020, where I was in a role that I felt like I was still sort of a developer, but that role actually pulled me away from that because I was strictly community. And so I was strictly like what I called taking our negative checkbook and trying to get us to a zero balance in the developer love space, because obviously devs hated us. We took away a bunch of stuff. And so we were re-rolling out the next version of the API. And so I would say that's probably when my tech skills went downhill. But I'll tell you what, like, I fully agree. I was the absolute best developer advocate that I could have ever possibly been when I was in the weeds of using the product, building with the product. And in that role, I was also training customers. Like, I had a very hybrid type of a role, because if you understand it, you're building with it. Then when someone comes in and they're like, I have this really intricate problem, and they've checked everywhere, right? They're like, I can't find a solution. And you're like, oh, ding, I know my product so well that I can tell you about this like hack workaround that actually is like pretty great with our product. So it's good enough for you to want to come over and switch. You know, like, you have to have the intel and the knowledge to be able to not sell them, but like authentically solve their problems. And it just so happens that it's through the product that you're working with.
Yeah. I will say about my, I guess, spicy take then is like, that was a general observation, but there were still people doing what I said is like the good thing, which is they're super technical still and doing all the other things. But like, I don't know. It was just interesting. And like, I'm pretty much convinced like that's why there was a lot of these layoffs too, potentially.
Yep.
You know, so
I think the other piece that goes into that, I think, and this is like, you know, again, just a hypothesis, and I'd love to hear what you think. And honestly, like, I'd love to have this conversation a year from now after you've been at your company for a year, because here's the other side that I think that at that time, DevRel was so sought after that they were pulling engineers, they were pulling whoever, right, to come into these roles. And like, sometimes great if you came from a non-traditional engineering, but you were like a teacher and you taught yourself how to code. PJ, shout out to you, man, you're awesome. Right? Like, there was some that was very beautiful. But I think that there were also a lot that where they just pulled an engineer in and was like, you're going to be a developer advocate. Or an engineer was like, I can't get the job, but DevRel is crazy right now. And they didn't understand business. That is a huge fundamental sort of drawback. If and only if, right, you are strategically guiding that entire DevRel function, which at that time it was hire the one and only developer advocate, have no strategy for them, and then expect magic to just come out.
Yeah. Speaking of PJ Metzia, I haven't met him in person, but I know he's good people. And I think is he still at GitHub Education now?
Yeah. Yes.
I can't remember where is it.
Yeah. He moved over there. His dream job coming from being a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to my old coworker, Becca, too, who's at the Linux Foundation now.
Love her.
She is amazing, too, because she was a literal English teacher. And I can't stress enough how important teaching skills are. Like, if like career changers, I think in general, it's a good thing.
Yep.
But like, if you're a teacher, you're coming in with like hot superpowers. You know what I mean? Because
Yes.
You know, because she's able to convey things, and she writes really well, too. And like that's definitely her superpower, along with building community. Like, she started Virtual Coffee, which I've been a part of since pretty much the beginning. And so like, yeah, she's awesome, too. So just got to give a shameless shout out to my old coworker and friend.
I love that very much. I feel the same way. So absolute shout out to Becca. She is phenomenal. I think I get to talk to her on Friday, which I'm super
excited. Oh, nice.
Not on the show, but I realized I need to get her on the show now that you brought that up. So she'll be on the show in the future, because I'll beg her to be on the show. But yeah, actually, like, when I think about open source and like bringing developers together, she is like the first person that comes to mind. And it is, it's really just because of like her absolute love for the developer community. Like, she started Virtual Coffee. Like, if anyone who has been a part of that network, it's a beautiful developer ecosystem and network. And so, I don't know, she's sort of like what I feel like really represents like true open source, like developer community building. She gets it and does it. And
Big time, big time. So lucky for you, Linux Foundation. So,
yeah, exactly. Lucky for them. Actually, oddly enough, not going to chat about it too much, but I had a client opportunity yesterday that's an open source project that actually like has a budget. And I was like, holy crap, can I get an open source client that has a budget that I can actually work with? So when you were mentioning earlier about if I could just work on open source, like that would be my life. And I was like, ha!
That's awesome, I think, if that works out.
I know, right? I think it would be awesome. Honestly, I'd love to bring Becca in a little bit. It's a Linux Foundation project. So, I mean, I feel like there's maybe there's some love to be shared. But yeah, I think open source is really, really quite a very beautiful thing. Honestly, I don't really know many developers that don't love open source.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like I started off in closed source. Like I most of my career has actually been in the .NET ecosystem, like C#, ASP.NET, ASP.NET MVC. From like 2002 to like 2016, mid 2016, that I was just all .NET and stuff. And open source literally transformed my career for the better. I was working at a .NET shop. We were using Angular 1.4.3 at the time. I think this is pre-Angular TypeScript.
Yep.
And
early days.
For context, like little history here, React came out in 2013. This is 2016. I was interested in working with React. We weren't going to use it at work. So I started contributing to a couple projects. Well, one, I wanted to get in. I was always a fan of JavaScript. So I've been using TypeScript pretty early since 2016, because for more history, but TypeScript's been around since 2012. So
look at you and your dev history.
Yeah, sorry. And it's like, do people know what Encyclopedia Britannica is? Does anybody in the stream know that? Anyways, maybe not. But like, I was just like, I was always a fan of JavaScript, and I was like, React looks cool, and I wanted to get into Node.js because I wanted to get into open source, and all these things were open source. And at the time, .NET wasn't like, you know, it just wasn't a thing. And
no, it wasn't.
To their credit, though, like .NET is open source now, and like people like Scott Hanselman are like definitely spreading the good word about that. But at the time, it's like it just wasn't an option for me. So like I kind of went full tilt on that, and I started contributing to this React boilerplate project, which is essentially like we have frameworks today, but before frameworks we had boilerplate projects. So I ended up contributing to one that Corey House, who's a pretty well-known React consultant, created, called React Slingshot. And then eventually I became a maintainer, and this led to landing a role at a fintech company where I was doing TypeScript and React in 2016. Perfect. and like the whole trajectory of my career changed after contributing to open source for the better. Got paid more. I got to meet people I never would have interacted with before. Like, so lots of pluses. Like there are some downsides to open source, like funding, and like sometimes there's just bad actors, but like overall, like open source for me has been amazing. So
I agree. I think, definitely bad actors. Like that's a whole conversation over in the WordPress community right now, huh? Like,
That
seeing that come to light. Right. But I do agree. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, like I think that developer relations or developer advocacy is a thing and has become a thing so predominantly because we really do, coming back to it, developers just want to hang out with each other. And so I think like when we can sort of sit elbow to elbow talking about, you know, technology and what someone is building, I think that's where sort of that fire and passion comes in. So when you think about open source, right, it's like the epitome of DevRel. That's what open source is like, if you can take the techniques and sort of tactics of open source, that is DevRel. It's like getting involved in a community, right? Giving back to that community, helping other developers, contributing to a beautiful project or product, right? So I think it's, I don't know. They go hand in hand. Okay. Yeah. So I try to like end these at 30 minutes, but good grief, that doesn't happen. And the conversations are so good. So I'm like, why
sorry.
Did I end it? No, this is great. Are you good until the hour mark?
Yeah, I'm good to the hour. I have a stand up in 16 minutes, so I'm good.
Perfect. Okay. Well, then we can kind of dive over into, you've shared a lot of like things that you enjoy, a lot of like your career. I didn't ask you, what is your developer education, if you have any specific?
Yeah, skills? So I did go to university. I did study computer science, but to be fair, I did not apply myself as much as I should have. So I went to school in the Maritimes of Canada. It's great out there, but I ended up playing rugby down there, and like I didn't know they had a team when I went there. That's not why I joined there.
That's cool though.
I decided to go to that university because my cousin from Ottawa had done a computer science co-op program there. So she recommended it. And I don't know about you, but like I had friends growing up in high school where they knew like, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a whatever. I'm like, I don't even know what I had for lunch. You know, like, let me check what's in my tooth, you know, like, you know, so like I went to university to study computer science just because like, I did well at math and stuff. So I was like, and I did like, you know, I started doing HTML, JavaScript and CSS in like the early 90s with like, internet providers used to have like space you could actually put on their, you could have your own homepage on like your local internet provider.
Yeah.
And then there's like stuff like GeoCities and stuff. So like that got me interested in things.
Yeah.
And so I went to university, but like once I got there, to be fair, like I basically focused more on rugby. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still graduated, but like, also it's a little different in Canada. Like university does not cost as much as the States. Like I think at the time it was $5,000 Canadian a year.
So, oh like, man, that's amazing.
And I left with no debt because my parents set up a education fund. Like you can, I don't know what they call them in the States, but you can basically put money aside to pay for school. And then I also did a co-op program. So I basically left with no debt, that's which incredible. Is definitely different than the States I know, but, anyways, like, yeah. The thing I'll say though, is like I love playing rugby there. Like I was playing first division university, traveling all over the provinces. And the one thing I learned, like I did still learn some fundamentals of computer science, obviously, even though I did fail, I did fail data structures a couple times.
That happens.
But the main takeaway I had is like, I do think it was still good. Like even years later, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that thing from school now. And now it makes sense because like I was less concerned about learning in university, which sounds kind of funny. As soon as I left university, I was always just trying to soak up stuff, which is kind of funny. It's like if I go on the beach now and I'm like with friends or like my buddy Scott will be like, are you reading one of those nerd books? Like he's like this, a salesperson, a guy I played rugby with. So he just pokes fun at me all the time, but it's like, you know, I'm lying on the beach reading a book about Rust or something. And he's like, okay, whatever, man. but anyways, what I would say though about the education aspect is one thing that I learned is like your network is super important. So like for people who maybe have not played a lot of organized sports, I got to university. I literally knew nobody. I went to a rugby practice. I immediately knew 70 people. And then we had a women's team. So I met all of them as well. So that's like another 70 people. So all of a sudden I had this immediate community. We hung out all the time together, everybody. And even years later now, like I go to a reunion there. It's like every 5 years. And there are literally people from the literal first team that was in 1969. And so like, we're talking like 80-year-old people or whatever, all the way up to like the most recent team. And that is an entire network of people that like have your back typically. And like even
that's amazing.
Even playing club rugby here, like in Montreal, I played for the Montreal Irish. The way we set up things when new people joined the team was like if somebody came from out of town, oh yeah, Johnny just came from England. Somebody get him a job. Like that was like,
ooh, like, I love,
you know,
that.
Like just like hook them up. Like sometimes it didn't work out, but like the goal was always like, we've got some new players, somebody hook them up, you know?
Aww.
And that's how I got my first job in tech actually. Is
that's amazing.
I was working, I finished university, wasn't landing a job, took me like a year. I was doing internet technical support. I was doing administrative work. And then I was at practice one day and I'm forever grateful for my friend and teammate, Bob Meunier. I'm talking a lot of rugby, I know, but basically we'd practice twice a week at club. And then we'd go for like beers and like a meal after. And he was just asking me after practice one night, like, are you still looking for work? And basically he literally gave me a Visual Basic 6 CD-ROM and said, like, if you want to like I'm looking for a junior dev. If you want to come work with me, take this CD-ROM, do the tutorials over the weekend and come in on Monday. I might be skewing that story a little bit, but like essentially I had beers with my boss, future boss, whose head was on my butt every game of a rugby match. If people want to know about rugby, I used to play hooker, which is like the person right in the middle. And you're called a hooker because you literally use your leg to hook the ball back. And there's three people in the front, two in the middle, and the two people in the middle are called second row because it's the second row. So my boss's head was always on my like left or right butt cheek every weekend, which I found kind of funny. So anyways, sorry to say that network is important.
Yeah. Well, bringing back the friends references, that's the only way that I know anything about rugby. So thank you for the insights into rugby, because now I know. Roller derby, also super cool.
Yeah.
Something I would love.
Roxy played roller derby.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Like, Roxy, can like old women do that now? Like, my rollerblades are literally right there. And I'm like obsessed with rollerblading, but I have never done it. Nick was a hooker.
Exactly. Somebody's going to read that out of context on LinkedIn, and I'm going to get flagged. But yeah, it's it was fun though.
Awesome. Okay. One last question, selfishly, because I want to hear about it. Nick was a hooker when he played rugby. Nick also does some other cool sport stuff. So what other types of sports and things do you have? I heard some rumors, some things in your backyard that I think the listeners need to hear about.
Yeah. So aside from rugby, and like I work out in my gym and I snowboard a bit in the winter, but I build an ice rink in my backyard. So for context, if people are just joining, I'm in Montreal, Canada. So similar weather to anywhere East Coast in the States. And one of my daughters plays a sport called ringette. It's more Canadian than American, but basically this sport came about when women weren't allowed to play hockey. So ringette is essentially, think of a hockey stick with the blade cut off. And instead of a puck, you're basically skewering like a round ring that looks like a uncooked bagel.
Oh, nice. Okay. Got it. I got the visual.
Anyway, she started playing, and this is when the pandemic started, lockdown and all that.
Yep.
And like just something for her to do. So I spoke to one of the guys I played rugby with from Australia. So an Australian showed a Canadian how to build an ice rink.
That's amazing.
But basically I built one in my backyard. It was 16 feet by 24 feet. And it's not as complicated as it sounds. Like I will admit I am not that handy. So basically I bought deck boards, didn't really cut them. So I just screwed them together.
Yep.
And then you just reinforce it with some screws and a bit of rebar. It's not as complicated as it sounds. And then the magic pieces, you buy a liner that you put in, and then you just fill it up with water. And I did this the first year, and then I posted them on socials, and like people were like, oh, that's cool, that's cool. And then like literally since the first time, every year when it gets close to the time of when I built that first one, somebody will say like, oh, are you building the rink this year? Like people get excited about it. And this year we were kind of like, okay, I think we're done with it, because like she's just busier with other stuff too. But just built a scaled down version. So it's only 12 by 10 now, but it's just a practice shooting. So there's photos on my socials about it, but it looks really nice in the dark because I have lights hanging on the clothesline. So it actually looks really nice, but it's not as complicated as people might think it is to make it. So
I love that. Screw people for saying that women can't play hockey. I used to play hockey all the time. Got hit in the mouth by a puck though. That was not fun. My mom flipped, because like if anyone has ever, like if you've ever been hit in the mouth, like it bleeds so much. Yeah. So when, by the time I got home, it was like, I was like coated in blood. Lots of fear by the mother.
I don't think I've ever had something hit me in the face, but I've definitely been punched in the face.
Right.
And it, you know, it's usually like, yeah, no, that didn't really feel great.
Doesn't feel great. Lots of blood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of blood in your head, even cutting yourself shaving. But anyways.
Yeah, that is so true too. Okay, well, we have like 5 minutes left. I also like to ask people how they get unstuck. So if you want to elaborate that in like 2 minutes, and then would love to talk about how folks can find you online, and then we'll let you get to
the stand-up. Cool, cool. The only thing I'll say about women's hockey is women can definitely play hockey.
Yes, they can.
In university, I wrestled in the off season of rugby to stay in shape. Mm. And our coach,
we saw the
that really is me. Somebody asked me if that was me. It really is me. The coach coordinated a practice with the women's field hockey team. Mm. And for context, even though I'm Canadian, I'm a terrible skater. I've never played hockey. So I put on all the equipment wrong. I get on the ice, and Tina Cormier, who is like AAA maritime champion in field hockey, just slides right into me and like hip checks me and knocks me on the ground. So I can definitely confirm that women can play, and a lot of Canadian women's national champions came from my university too. So anyways, shout out to women in hockey. But
it's a good stress reliever.
Yeah. So what we were saying, what was the question again?
How do you get unstuck?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say obvious stuff, but like people do not do these things still.
Love to hear it.
Things aren't working out, go for a walk, literally change the scenery. Like I'm at my desk now. I never eat my lunch at my desk as well. I used to do this all the time. When I used to work in an office, I'd be like, got to eat my lunch so I can get back to work, you know? And like, it's totally wrong approach. You need a change of scenery. If not so much in the winter, but like in the summer and fall and spring, I'll literally go sit on my deck outside at lunch and eat lunch there, even if it's like 10 minutes outside or whatever.
Yep.
But literally stepping away. And sometimes, and I didn't do this when I was younger in my career, but like sometimes you just got to tap out and say, it's not working today. Like just regroup tomorrow. And your brain is like super awesome. Like you go to bed and your brain is still processing things. And it's like, I guarantee you, you're going to wake up the next morning and you're either going to be unstuck or maybe like the whole thing, it just, you know, it's, there's a revelation in the morning. And like, I really do think stepping away. That said, like, obviously if something critical is happening at work, you can't really do that. But like, if it's not something like that, definitely just step away. Exercise for me has always just, it just clears my head. Like squats are like my favorite exercise. And it's like, I literally feel like the weight coming off my shoulders, you know, after. So that's what I would say. And I know it's general advice, but I guarantee you a lot of people still don't do that. So.
Yeah. I will say I'm really guilty of not doing that too, even though I do actually know that it is better for me to get away from my desk and go outside or like go work out. I'm a lot happier when I work out, yet I still don't prioritize it as a primary thing. Okay. So you have an awesome live stream that you do as well. Very fun, casual, hanging with devs. You're also across the internet. So where can folks find you if they want to come hang out with you?
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks for letting me plug that. Easiest way is just to go to literally nikkit.online and all my socials are there, including my blog and also the stream schedule, but like YouTube, Instagram, whatever. It's all there. So that's the best way to find me. And I'm literally nikkit online everywhere. And some people have asked me where that name came from, and it's because when I played rugby, people in sports, people usually call you by your last name, like Taylor, Kriesel. But at one point people started calling me Nikki T. And it's a terrible handle, to be honest, because like clearly I'm online if I'm on the internet, but I just never changed it. So it's Nikki. That's why Nikki T online exists. But
love it.
It made for fun when I'm offline. So if I say something that's like after hours, people call me Nikki T offline.
I love it. I have no cool story for mine at all. I was like, man, it made sense. That was it. You know, that's my username.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. Well, go check out Nick's live stream. It is awesome. It's been fabulous having you on. Great conversation this morning, per usual. And I hope you have a fabulous rest of your day along with everyone else.
Cool. Thanks for hanging, everybody. Later.